WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into spring season, and the Maryland Crab Cake Tour is out on the road. I have my fantastic Betty Boop scratch-off tickets, courtesy of the Maryland Lottery. We'll be giving these away, letting ourselves play El Guapo this week. Now, next week, on Friday, a little basketball, some crab cakes at Costas Inn. We'll be there from 2 until 5. Great, great guest. My pal Mike Rosenfeld, my chief digital officer, is going to be there. There's a rumor Bill Cole and Todd Schuller and the whole East Side Mafia going to be getting together. Mary Ann Scully is going to be joining us as well. And basketball. And then on the 23rd, most importantly, we come back to our home base of Fadley's in Lexington Market. And Damie reached me this week, and you know, if you've seen Damie and her family on the show, you know her mom, the queen, the czarina of all things crab cake. I watched her throwing it around on Christmas Eve. Literally, I went over to pick up my crab cakes a couple of months ago. We told the story about the issues with how your crab meat cost $55 a pound last summer. And I took to the road in August. People told me, don't go. Crab meat will be too expensive. I said, no, have to go and investigate this. And somehow, first week of March, this winds up back on my desk because this is a recurring problem. It's an annual problem. It's a crab picking problem as much as it's a crab harvesting problem or a crab shortage. Jack Brooks is back. He is a defending champion here on Baltimore Positive. He has J.M. Clayton. He begins the morning, and that's beautiful sunshine you see behind him that's blinding me in beautiful Cambridge, Maryland, right down there on the wharf, on the water. Jack, how are you? How is your winter? I'm sorry I have to bring you back on here and tell the story all over again, but this really affects your life, your livelihood, your family, your business, the area, the region, really, the whole state, does it not?
It certainly does. Thanks for having me on again, Nestor. Really appreciate it. It's very impactful, not in a positive way, unfortunately, for the working waterfront in rural Chesapeake Bay, Maryland. And it's a recurring problem, as you mentioned, with the H-2B visa cap. H-2B visas are a non-agricultural seasonal work visa, a legal program which allows workers to come here from another country, in our case, Mexico, during the season.
But the key there, you said non-agricultural, right? I just want to stop you on that and saying this is different than picking blueberries or cotton or wheat or tomatoes or any crop, right? This is a water issue, correct?
Quite different, actually. I mean, they both the programs, for the most part, deal in food. But this is non-agricultural. So the agricultural program, on the other hand, does not have a numerical cap. So you can bring in as many people as you need because it's food. It's a necessity. It's an item that we all need. And so are we. But we're just not agriculture. We're food. So the H-2B visa program is a program that works. The seafood industry has been using it here in Maryland since the late 80s, and really the first industry in Maryland to start using the program back then.
Where were we in the late 80s? Because I want to start at the beginning, because I have been down to your facility. Anyone that wants to go to YouTube and go to the WNST channel in Baltimore, there are tens of thousands of views. Jack, the videos I shot of those beautiful Mexican workers picking crabs at a speed, lightning speed, are the most viewed things I had on my channel last year. You know, above and beyond chats with the Speaker of the House and the Governor of the State and the Mayor of the City and celebrities and rock stars and Cal Ripken and anything else. Those videos, people were fascinated by it because in our region, we love crab meat, right? Like we love to consume it. We love to eat it. And I tell the story, and this is where, you know, I get up on Uncle Jack's lap and say, when I was a boy in Dundalk, you know, we would take the crab pots down the Bear Creek, where is now Mariner's Landing with a chicken neck, and we'd catch a couple crabs, throw them in the pot. But by and large, in Dundalk, my dad would call Ross's, call Ruggiero's, call the Corral Inn, call anywhere at Al Seafood and say, how much are they a dozen? And this would start June 1st. We'd eat crabs June, July, August. My mom would get crab meat, special crab meat for $4.99, whatever a pound, bring it home, mayonnaise, mustard, celery seed, fried up like a hockey puck, serve it with some mustard, some saltines, right back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
And I never heard of, I mean, you never really heard of crab meat so much in January and December, but in the summer, everybody had it. We all ate it. It cost a little more. The bigger crabs were more, but you could have a crab cake. It was no problem. We didn't feel like there was a shortage, and I didn't know where they came from, quite frankly. So I have been told on your side of the world, there were just tons of places that did your kind of work 40 years ago here.
Exactly, Nestor. Yeah, Maryland crab. Maryland is noted for crab and crab cakes. And, you know, crab cakes, the main ingredient, obviously, is crab meat. And the way it all began, I mean, well, my particular company here, ours, my great-grandfather started in 1890. And for generations, the watermen, the fishermen would go get up early in the morning, ready to go to work. The wife would get up, prepare him a breakfast and pack him a lunch. And he'd go off, 3, 4 a.m. and go to work. And then she was up. She'd go to the processing house and process seafood, whether shuck oysters, pick crabs. And so that's the way it went. And then they had kids. They brought the young kids in to do the same thing, to teach them a good work ethic, to be able to get up in the morning, have a job, a good traditional job, and get a paycheck at the end of the week. And that went on for generations, and that's how this industry existed until the 60s, 70s, where the chain started to fracture, started to rust, and started to get broken, and that more and more young people were unwilling to wait out the off-season being right around Thanksgiving through March. And tough to lose your job, get laid off in Thanksgiving when you have other options. You've got trade schools, you've got community colleges, you have other opportunities for employment, retail now, where you didn't have so much then. And transportation's much better, so they can live in kind of a rural area and get to their job, you know, pretty easily. So,
and it's not glorious work either, but it's necessary work.
You did the video. You've seen it. I mean, it's an art, and women are much better at it than guys, Nestor. In that it's like sewing or knitting. You kind of were working with your fingers. It's kind of a delicate pipe thing to get the crab out of the shell. So, it's hard.
Well, we've all picked a crab, right? I mean, we've all picked a crab. Some people take 15 minutes to pick a crab and they never get all the meat. And, you know, Damie showed me how to backdoor it and cut this, and, you know, I get lollipops, you know. But
right, exactly.
Trying to pack it is a different art, trying to ship it. And that's aside from having to go out into the water and harvest, literally hunt a wild creature. There are no crab beds. You're right. We're not growing crabs. We're not growing them in a pot and adding water and, you know, adding some vitamins. This is from year to year, we've had issues with salinity, oxygenation in the bay, grasses in the bay, weather condition, all of those things factor into whether that crab ever winds up on a boat headed to your place, right?
Oh, exactly. Exactly. But the crabs are pretty resilient. I mean, you know, we've had up and downs, as you mentioned, the grasses, the environment, and the bay, but pretty resilient the bay is and the crabs. But you know, what we've experienced, and it started, like, as I mentioned, in the 70s, especially, was a shortage of people to come work. So then my father here and some of his colleagues in the industry said, well, let's make machines. Let's build machines to automate the industry. So, and they did. I mean, they were good machines, successful machines. They're not big, the jumbo lump, the nice big round pieces that you like to see. But they had a lot of shell in it. And they were good for a while. But then we just could not replace the person going in, not yet, picking that crab with a knife one at a time, you know, by hand, like, as I say, like knitting and sewing. And everybody on your program, I'm sure, has picked crabs before, and you're picking shell out of your mouth and stuff like that. Well, people, when they buy a pound of crab meat, as you mentioned, you know, $30, $40 a pound, $50, whatever it is, you don't want to be picking a whole lot of shell out of your mouth. So anyway, we started losing orders for that mechanized meat. And back in the early 2000s, basically, we had to stop running that, and unfortunately. But it took a lot of people to run that, too. You know, the machinery, it took 35, 40 people, and we were having a really tough time staffing that as well. So,
because that, again, was a seasonal business. That machine's not running in December and January, February, right?
Extremely, yeah. So we've done all kinds of things to try to recruit and retain local workers. Early release detention centers. We went to food job fairs. Went to Baltimore I got the governor's award here somewhere one year for the pledge for the hiring young people. Students and asked me, you know, how many you want to hire? I said 50, and they said 50 kids. You'll hire 50 kids. Yeah. So what are they going to do? I said, they're going to process crabs, big crabs. And they said, you want me to put that down? I said, yes. So put it down. I got the award for high pledge for that year for hiring young people, but we didn't have anybody come and apply for this job. So it got in the 80s and early 90s, we were looking at each other and watching the business go down. And we said, you know, if we don't start doing something, we'll have to get an exit strategy, see what get out of this, close this thing down. Been going since 1890.
Now, so many people have done that, right? I mean, like that, the real story is you're one of the last remaining houses that picks crab meat on the eastern shore of Maryland, where we're known for crabs.
Unfortunately, a lot of that happened, Nestor. And in 1995, there were 54 companies in Maryland to do what we do, and now they're less than 20. So we decided, well, okay, the only way we're going to survive is to get as staff look outside the box. And we did, and we discovered this H-2B program, and then we started using it. And I mentioned it's a program that works. The people we have working here when we have visas come back year after year after year, you know, 15, 20, 30 years. And they like it because they can come and work and they make good money, take it home. They support our economy when they come. They support jobs. This is an American jobs issue because 2.54, two and a half American jobs are supported and created by each and every worker that comes in here from Mexico and processes seafood in Maryland.
Well, you saw those numbers out, but if that crab meat doesn't come off of your processing plant on July 8th, I'm not eating a crab cake in Parkville on July 12th, period.
You may be eating a crab cake in Parkville, but what's happening is people aren't going to stop eating crab. They're not, if they can't buy Maryland or domestic, they're going to go to Venezuela or China and get their crab meat. So we're shipping our jobs and these businesses to these countries, our friends in China and Venezuela, and they're fishermen and the jobs here support people, truck drivers and stuff that we don't have work for if we don't have visas. But people continue to eat crab. They won't eat the real genuine article, but there's crab out there available from these other countries. So it's an American jobs issue. And then in 2005, we never knew there was a numerical cap to the program, 66,000 annually visas that are handed out in this H-2B program.
And that's for the whole country, right?
That's nationwide, and that's all 50 states.
Does that include like salmon in Alaska or, you know, fisheries in Idaho? I'm just thinking of places where fish comes from or seafood comes from, where there would be processing plants along tributaries and waterways anywhere in this country where they can't find local work to do this work.
That's a good point. The need for these visas is static here in the United States, and that for seafood, and that we have limits, as you know, how many crabs can be taken, how many oysters can be taken, how many fish can be taken, shrimp, crawfish. There are limits. It's managed. It's a managed resource that the governments manage. And so while landscape, for instance, they consume these visas. That industry has grown exponentially since 2005. They are consuming most of these visas, while seafood is static. In the lower 48, about 6,000 visas are needed for seafood. That's excluding Alaska. Alaska needs about 6,000 on their own because they do a lot of fish out there. So they, and then 6,000 from the lower 48. And mostly from the Gulf states, Texas, on up here to New England. So, but that need is static in that this year, for instance, Nestor, for the second half cap of 33,000 for the date of need, April 1st, they had almost 140,000 requests for in the first 2 days.
140,000 requests for 66,000 visas.
For 33.
See, they 33,000 visas.
They split that cap up now from they out of 66, they split it up 33,000 for October 1st. And then 33,000 for April 1st.
Summer, winter, seasonal.
You got it. So, over, almost 140,000 requests for in the first 2 days of taking applications in January for the April 1st date of need. So the way the U.S. Department of Labor does it, they just say, well, let's do a lottery. And they don't call it a lottery, but that's what it is. And basically, they throw all these applications for thousands and thousands of employers in a pile, and they start yanking them out electronically. And, the very first ones come out, they're the first ones get processed. And so they get to the front line. And so the first ones to get there to get any of the first 33,000 visas, get them. And the ones that get there too late are too late and will not have visas, will not be staffed. And unfortunately, a lot of them be lights out this year. And, you know, we're losing one. Right now, we lost one on Hooper's Island. There are 10 of us now left here to do this kind of work and use this program in Maryland. We're all here in Dorchester. And one of the operators said, gosh, they've been in business since the 40s, said, you know, I just can't take it anymore. We're losing money. We've been locked out of the program for several of the last many years. And Jack, I just can't take it. So they have the facility for sale. But who's going to buy it? Because the uncertainty of this program, you don't know if you can staff a business like this. So it's a horrible situation. We were deemed essential during the pandemic with all this, and priority was given to getting crossings for these workers. But still, you had to have a visa to get them crossed in. So it's a legal program that works, Nestor. And unfortunately, the program is broken. We were trying to get there's an appropriations bill that just you read about it, some funding for Ukraine and stuff like that. We were in there as far as having a returning worker exemption. And returning worker exemption basically would exempt any workers that have been here the last 3 years from being counted against the numerical cap. They come, they go, and they come back, and they go back. And that's true.
Honestly, Jack, because I was down at your facility. That's probably true with every Jack, right? Every Jack has over 30 years created a tentacle into a village, into a place, into a website, into another country in the same way. And I want to make this really clear because I had Ben Cardin on talking about this down at the beach last year during Mako. By the way, Jack Brooks is here. He is from J.M. Clayton. You have eaten his crab meat without probably knowing it. I'm going to be at Fadley's 2 weeks from now. And he's a great friend of Damie and a friend of ours here through all of this and the crab cake tour and going back and forth last year. But I guess the things I learned last summer about all of this was just how important all of this is. And we talk about the Ukraine issue and Belarus and Moldova and these countries that when I'm in Ocean City and I'm there getting a snow cone, I'm there getting a burger, I'm getting a crab cake at one of the restaurants, and you meet a nice young girl from Poland or a nice young guy whose name's Vladimir and he's from Kiev, because these are the same workers that are coming over to Ocean City has their tentacles into Europe to get help. Your work is specialized, artisan, and you have the same people. It stands to reason that if these people come up here every year for 90 days and they don't break the law and they provide a service and they're making money and they're doing good things, that this would be easier than this in regard to planning your business. And I keep going back to it's outrageous that you have to sit here in the middle of March and wondering whether you're going to have a business in April because you have this need to staff this that everyone knows is out in the open. No one's hiding where these workers are coming from or what their role is or their significance or what they do any more than it would be hiding a baseball player and saying that guy's from Puerto Rico. We let him play here. Or that person's from the Dominican or Venezuela, as my family was, and let him play here. It really is amazing that these pipelines that all of you have developed to have a farm team, to have workers. I've had to have workers here. We all, anybody that has a business, we all see the help wanted signs up. We're all trying to get good help. This is kind of an amazing thing that what you're asking for seems to be easy. I mean, it just seems to be, if clearances, passports, things match up, this could be made much easier by saying, look, I need 80 people every summer or whatever that number is. And these are the people and they're mainly the same. I could see if you had 10 new people that maybe that would be more of an issue. But in every Clayton, in Louisiana, Texas, Florida, New England, Maine, wherever fish or seafood is being harvested or crab, it's the same people, right? You don't want to be getting new people every year.
No, I mean, it's they like it because they come back, they bring they'll bring their family because it's an opportunity for them. And and the same for us. Again, it's a program that works. Now, ultimately, what we've been working toward, and hopefully one day that, our champions here in Washington, D.C. will be able to get it done. But, you know, back in 2005, when the cap first became an issue, then Senator Stevens from Alaska said, hey, this is a problem for my people in Alaska. At that point, Alaska was not using the H-2B program for processing fish. They were using the J-1. The same people go to Ocean City and serve you.
Jack, we broke up for a second. You said the same people at the J-1s in Ocean City that the Alaska program, and then you broke up. Let's start that one.
Okay. Yeah. So back in, I can't remember what year. Probably 12 years ago. Up until then, the salmon processing industry was using the J-1 program, which is a work and travel. It's the same program that are getting the people in down at Ocean City, as you mentioned, serving up popcorn, burgers, and things like that.
Seasonal workers, literally.
You got it. And it's work and travel. It's young people. They're students. It's a student visa and things like that. And it's a work and travel and learn and go back. And but the Alaska folks, the fish road technicians that they use to certify fish eggs as caviar that came, and the certifiers had to come from Japan, they were coming under an H-2B program. Well, they got locked out that year in 2005. So then Senator Stevens, who from Alaska, who was chairman of the Appropriations Committee, said, hey, I got to take care of this. So in a defense bill, probably about 2.5 inches thick, they were purchasing authorization to purchase tanks and guns and a ship or two and stuff like that. They had a little phrase in there and exempt fish roe processors from being counted against the numerical H-2B cap. So they're exempt. The fish roe processors are exempt, the ones that come and certify fish eggs as fish roe or caviar. And so simply what we need to do, because we are essential, we're a food processor, we're a food producer, is we want to expand that fish roe processor and add the word seafood. We add the word seafood, that takes care of the seafood processors here in the country. So that's the end game, to try to get that done. In the short term, it's hand to mouth, try to get like this year. Let's see what we can do to try to get, survive in 2022. And, this lottery that they had, 10 of these companies here in Maryland, only one won the lottery. Nine did not. And many of those are going to be dark. The lights are going to be shut out. And as I mentioned, one has put their place up for sale. They said, I can't take it anymore. And they lose money, the uncertainty.
Well, you also represent your competitors even in Dorchester County because you don't want to be the only guy doing this, literally, right?
rising tide floats all boats, right? And, there's not many boats of us left. And so, we work with our colleagues to try to make sure that, we try to sustain ourselves because, as you mentioned, nobody wants to be the last one there because that's an indication that it's not going to be long for your goal too. So, so we're working and hopefully the Congress will take this up and right this wrong. But the service industries that are consuming the visas, the grass is going to get cut and stuff like that. But, you just can't get anybody to come in. Unfortunately, I wish we could, like the old days, to get people, the local people to come, go to work, and go home. Simply that the people just won't do this kind of work anymore, Esther.
Jack Brooks is here. He is J.M. Clayton. I love crab meat. You love crab meat. He loves crab meat. He is the reason people like you and I get some crab meat from Maryland, especially during the summer months. And listen, I'm sure I'll have Ben Cardin on again soon. I'm sure I'm going to talk to Van Hollen. Everybody's politicizing right now. And, you know, I'm going to have Heather Mazier on over on the Eastern Shore, and people are running for things. Governor's race is all up. I will make sure this stays front and center, because as the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, we hear about gas prices going up, right? I mean, we remember the crab cake thing last summer for everyone and wondering why. And to your point, it's not there aren't enough crabs. There aren't enough people to pick the crabs that are here, right?
Exactly. And as far as costs going up, I mean, everything you touch, we touch, from fuel to wire to wood to everything that we do, prices are crazy. I mean, it's insane what's happening right now and been happening, but it's really, really, you know, that's just piling on right now. But if we can get staffed, we can compete. You know, there are people, Nestor, as you mentioned, there are people who want Maryland crab. They want local. They want sustainable. They want accountable. And, you know, unfortunately, they're going to have to go to China or Venezuela to get their crab meat now, because all these places are going to be shut out.
It's not rhetoric, man. It's the real deal. I've seen it with my own eyes. I'll be seeing it again. Jack, you know, when I did the crab cake tour last year, my wife thought it was nuts, but most people thought it was nuts. And they're like, hey, you can eat 30 crab cakes in 30 days. You're going to get sick of crab meat. You were worried about me. I stopped down, saw you on the way down. You gave me a pound of crab meat. And I was like, no, don't. I don't need any more. No, but this, you're showing me the lumps. And I'm like, I'm going to give it to Dennis. I gave it to Dennis Colatsos. He said it was the greatest crab meat. He made crab cakes that night. But you gave me your cooler, and I had your cooler in my car back and forth across the bridge. I wound up leaving it, left you a funny picture, you know, through all of it. But I never got tired of crab meat, and I so didn't get tired of it that we're going to – I'm back on the tour again. I'm literally having a crab cake today over at Catonsville in the 21228. But I'm going to do 31 crab cakes in 31 days in August. So you think you got rid of me, but you didn't. My wife hasn't seen your facility yet. I drove her down that beautiful road that leads to your place with all of those beautiful old school, like Southern mansion. Yeah. Oh my God. It's such a beautiful neighborhood where your place is, that I showed my wife. I said, man, we got to get off of 50. So what I told you, and I told the mayor of Salisbury, I admitted that I had never gotten off of 50. I had never gone up the Hurlock Suicide Bridge. I had never gone down through a Blackwater and down to Old Salties down in Hooper's Island, where I had a delicious crab cake as well, that I'm going to do it again this summer, because I enjoyed meeting you and your workers and so many people. And I hear that there are some places in Cambridge to get a beer that I didn't get last time. Like, you know,
there's a local brewery here that makes it and serves it up, and a lot of folks around here serve their stuff. So it was a lot of fun having you last year too, Nestor. So come back. We hope the lights will be on. Right now it's not looking so hot, but you know, we look forward to seeing it.
Well, rinse down that cooler. We're going to try to get you some help and get you some workers there so we can come and enjoy some delicious Maryland crab meat. Jack Brooks, defending champion here, always giving us the facts about what's going on over in the Eastern Shore, and the facts about crabs and crab meat and what's happening here. And I want to give a shout out to Damie as well. We're going to be at Fadley's. I would have worn my Fadley shirt, but I was a little chilly in here today. But I will get it out on the 23rd. We're going to be at Fadley's in the morning, doing Baltimore Positive, going back to Lexington Market. We had issues. We shut the tour down for a couple of months with COVID and the Omicron. But we're back out on the road again. Really looking forward to having some great conversations. Jane Miller, Rob Roblin, Alan McCallum, Don Moeller, Damian O'Doherty, all joining us this week at El Guapo. Great guest at Costas next week, and I'm sure we'll have some great stuff for Damie and for everyone there with the Fadley's family down at Lexington Market on the 23rd. Jack, take care of yourself. Next time I see you, we're going to get a crab cake. I'm going to give you a Betty Boop ticket, all right?
Sounds good. Thanks.
You're
Master.
In Maryland,
appreciate
and you're
it.
Of the right age to win, so we appreciate
okay,
that.
Okay, buddy.
We appreciate the lottery for sponsoring these conversations as well, and all we're doing with the Crab Cake Tour to shine a light on our state and our city and how much we love it and how much we love crab cakes around here. And which one makes the best? They're all good. They're Maryland crab cakes. I'm Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. BaltimorePositive.com.